Nice to meet you. My name is Micah Barnum. This is my wife, Holly. We just celebrated our 17th anniversary in January, so it's... have we been married for longer than anyone is old in this room, by chance? Okay, all right. Someday, that will be the case. Yeah. We'll get there soon enough. A part of our story is our kids, and so I just want to throw up a picture of... this is our family. My oldest is Noble, and this was taken in November. And he's already grown significantly since November, and so it's crazy. Noble, Adler, Iris, and Deacon are our kids, and we just are thankful that God has given us these great gifts.
Yes. So further agents of sanctification.
That's right.
In our lives.
Yeah, yeah. So. Spouse and then kids. It's a glorious combination. So, well, today we want to go ahead and jump in and talk about the subject of power. Essentially, what we're looking to talk about is how a husband and wife look at each other with the idea of how do we solve problems? How do we arrive at decisions? Like the video said earlier, who wears the pants in the family? How does all that play out? Because, to be honest, that is the underlying issue. That's the operating system that makes determinations for your marriage. So the other topics that you've covered so far in the last several weeks, time, money, and sex, those are all very specific issues you got to talk through. Power, to me, is the operating system that those items begin to be acted upon. And our journey in that has been filled with ups and downs. There have been times where we handled things well, and of course, times that we haven't handled things well. And rather than trying to say, here's a list of examples, I want to give one quote that if you start looking at the broad story of our marriage, this one particular quote summarizes Micah and Holly Barnum in our struggle for power. And so it's a Vince Lombardi quote, an old Green Bay Packers football coach. He says, gentlemen, we will chase perfection, and we will chase it relentlessly, knowing all the while that we can never attain it. But along the way, we shall catch excellence. And I don't think this is some sort of marriage axiom that you should walk away with this, but this is our struggle. Because when I grew up, the home that I have, that I grew up in, my personality, very much a, hey, man, that's good. You know, you didn't get everything finished. No problem. It's good enough. And so everything for me is, you know, it's good enough. No problem. Clean the kitchen, but I leave some food out on the counter. You know, hey, it's good enough. You know, that is just my default. So on the one hand, it's very easy to please me because, sure, it's good. Mac and cheese for dinner again. Hey, no problem. Good enough. You know, but that is also my fault. That's the side that I live on.
Yes, so you can guess. I'm at the way, way, way other end of that. I really do desire perfection. Why can't I have perfection? And so I value that to an extreme, though. I get pretty bogged down in the details of wanting things just the way I want things. And I'm not really willing to settle for what could be excellent, because my list over here was what was going to give the perfection. And so I become really inflexible and judging when it comes to how things get done. But for me, underlying this main title of power is who is in charge or who is the authority in this thing. So in any relationship, though, whether it's your parents or a roommate or a spouse, you're going to come up with this issue of power, and there's going to be a struggle, and someone is going to win, it feels like. So the problem is we tend to put value in different things, and that's when the power struggle really rears its head.
I'm not sure what the story would be for you. It's very possible that if you are engaged or you've only been married for a few months, perhaps you yourselves don't even know what the underlying theme of struggle might be for your marriage. But eventually what happens is it feels like there's a winner and a loser when it comes to whose value is going to be acted upon in your marriage. And that really is the nature of what we're talking about. How do things unfold in your home? Who makes the decisions? And what do the scriptures say about that? So our first point is, on your notes if you're following along, is at our core, we believe that power is important because without it, we won't get what we want. And so there's this desire that we have, whatever it might be, how we spend our money, how we spend our time, sex, things that you've covered in the last couple weeks. It could be, what do you watch on Netflix after dinner? I mean, it can be big things, it can be small things, but we have this sense of, I have this value, I want to see something happen. And power is the means by which I can influence my spouse, ultimately, to get what I want. And how does that unfold in your relationship? Our goal today is not so much to talk about the specifics. The last couple weeks, I hopefully touched on some really helpful aspects of some specific things. But what we want to talk about today is the heart issue that drives that struggle of power, and how sometimes that resolves itself to kindness, and sometimes that brings fighting within marriage.
Yeah. One of the main things in that is that we often don't really believe that when we are coming into a marriage, we are coming with different preferences. So every marriage will have matters of preference that each of us will vie for, that one will be the winner. So often when two people are dating or when they're engaged, you're deferring to one another's preferences pretty easily. You do your best to defer to the other person's preference. And we think, well, that's easy. We're in love. We find those things easy to defer to because we love this person. And we think that finding the one means that we will see eye to eye easily, or that we'll have somebody who will always be on our side. And the problem comes when we realize that they actually do have different preferences. Over time, those little things start to come up that you realize, oh, we don't really see eye to eye here. And we start to kind of feel like it's a personal affront. Like, wait, why aren't you on my side anymore? Why aren't you deferring to me? And sadly, we think that these differences are a betrayal somehow in our relationship. And it's almost a, if you really loved me, then you would agree with me. You would do things the way I do things. So inevitably, we turn our defense mechanisms on and we try and ensure that we get what we want. So the fairy tale is no longer at work, and we haven't built into our understanding of love for each other a sense of sacrifice for each other. We just want what we want and feel betrayed when we don't get it.
We kind of hinted at this in our video, but for us, that happened right at our first anniversary, where we had been long distance for so long. We finally were living in the same state, and it was just this glorious coming together in our first year of marriage. And so we just soaked everything up. Everything was great. But it was about year one, the start of year one, that there was a turn, and the love that had just felt so euphoric, so wonderful in our first, you know, months and year as married couple, It turned to where that love didn't just fill us up, it began to ask of us. It began to say, we have a differing of opinion here, and I'm asking you to let go of what you want and to do things my way. And so that brought about a measure of conflict, but also I think it was a little bit of a surprise because in my mind, you know, this relationship is supposed to bring me joy, and now actually it's costing me joy because that's the nature of sacrifice. If I give of something that I want and I let go of it, that's sacrifice. And so all of a sudden, the nature of sacrifice inside of the love that we had for each other, certainly, but that nature of sacrifice surprised us. And of course, nobody likes sacrificing. But what that does is, and this is the next point there on your sheet, is that it reveals the power struggle in marriage can serve as a mirror to reveal what we truly value. And so I think this is really helpful. As conflict comes into your relationship, it's important to step back and say, all right, I need to realize that this conflict is showing me actually what I value, and perhaps even what I value more than my spouse. So if my wife wants X and I want Y and I'm willing to fight for Y, in essence, what I'm saying is Y is more important than my wife. And so the issues that are already present in your relationship or perhaps still coming, they serve as a great mirror for you to realize, step back and realize, this is so important to me that I'm willing to press into my spouse, and maybe I shouldn't be. Do I really value this over my spouse? God has called us, I think, to something greater than that. And so that's what we're going to take a look at now.
Yeah, so if you have your Bibles, we're going to look in Ephesians chapter 5. This passage isn't really something new to you, probably, especially if you're already married. You've probably looked at this passage. I'm just going to flip open here. I'm going to start reading in verse 22. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. So our second point on your handout there is that the scriptures call us to relinquish our power to each other. The author here is Paul, and he is speaking to both husband and wife about how power should play out in marriage. But even if you're not married, don't tune this out, because this really kind of touches on the topic of authority. And to be honest, what Paul calls both the husband and the wife to in this passage is pretty radical. And if we take it seriously, what he's saying here, it should cause us to kind of go, whoa, I'm not sure I'm up for that. I think if we really take this to heart, even before we get married, we kind of go, what am I signing up for here? So it's fair to say that he's calling us to something hard. And for wives in particular, is he really asking us to submit in everything to our husband? And right here in black and white, it says it twice. So yes, he is calling us to submission. And that might be an unpopular word, or maybe you think, oh, I've got that down. But what he's really calling us to is giving up what we want so that the other person gets what they want. So the wife is to accept the leadership of her husband. That's that next point. He really is telling us to submit. And submission really is unpopular because nobody really wants to hear that they have to let somebody else be in charge. But in reality, we all have different authorities in our lives, whether it's our parents or a boss. We all have something, even the government, something that we have to submit to. And we always kind of go, I don't want to do that. I want to do my own thing and kind of stick our chests out and make things happen for ourselves. But we really all are responsible to submit to some authority. In regards to submitting to my husband, I think it boils down to just two things. Do I build into my definition of love a sense of sacrifice or submission? And the other one is, do I trust my husband as an authority? And if I can answer yes to both of those questions, then submission is really just that next step. It's really kind of an easy step if you can answer yes to those things. It's a deference to the other person. But if you can't answer yes to that, then it might be that you need to ask God to search your heart and to reveal some sins in your heart. Or you might need to go talk to a mentor or a friend about what's happening in your relationship that causes you to either not be willing to sacrifice as a part of your definition of love, or why you don't trust your spouse.
So the passage also talks to husbands, and I think we need to make sure we understand what the scriptures call us as husbands to. This is a hard passage. You're probably not going to go to Mardell and find a coffee mug that says wives are to submit. You know that this notion of submission, like it's hard, and I think especially in today's world, it is unpopular, and so. What is the scriptures call the guys to do? I think when you look at what Paul says, he doesn't start out by saying this. He doesn't say, hey guys, I just told all the wives to submit to you. So, like, let's make sure we keep it 50-50. Like, hey, you know, make sure that it's fair. You know, make sure that you don't, you know, run crazy with this because I did just give all the keys to you. Paul doesn't say that. In fact, he doesn't just try and bring it to some middle ground. He wants to say, guys, you need to realize this is a big deal, what I'm asking you to do. Here's what he says. He says, you are to love your wife like Christ loved the church. You are to give your life at such a deep level that you are letting go of your life. Oftentimes we think that the takeaway of being in charge, having a wife submit to you, is that you get all of the privileges of leadership, that you get to make the calls, it's about you, because that's really how our world works. The people who are in charge are the people who get the biggest paychecks, they get every deference they can make, they're calling things to their own benefit. But Paul is saying, no, actually, that is not how it is. Husbands, I want you to lead in the way that Jesus did. And what does that mean? I think it means this. A husband is to assume all the responsibility of leadership with none of its privileges. Right, guys, that's what the scripture calls us to. We are to love our wives and to serve our wives and to care for the woman that we have married with a realization that the responsibility of leading is on us, but we claim none of those privileges. A good friend of mine from my past put it well for me when he said, to be the leader of a home in the way that God intends it is that you as the leader, you get what you want last. That's what it means. Guys, if you are vying for your way, you're trying to press your physical size, this passage, whatever it might be, over your wife, you have completely misunderstood what God has called you to do. You get what you want last because that is the way that Jesus loved us. And that is the example that Paul points to.
So we've already said that we're not the models of perfection in this area. In fact, we really, just a few weeks ago, just had some home projects that we endeavored to complete together in harmony. It wasn't so harmonious at times. But those power struggles are real. They crop up in even little things, in big projects, but even sometimes in those big topics like money and sex and different things like that. So we're not sitting up here like we've got it all figured out. But we have done some work in this area in our hearts. We really have asked the Lord to reveal to us those things that we are holding on to too tightly. So for me, my struggle comes in the details of how things are done. I get stuck there really easily, where Micah can just be okay with whatever. I am just, this is the list, and this is how it's supposed to go, and this is how it's supposed to be cleaned, or whatever it is. I really get stuck in the details, and I typically want to micromanage those things to the very end. Anybody else with me? I mean, I know I'm not alone out there. So when Micah doesn't adhere to the details of my plan, I typically handle it with huffs and puffs and a general grumbling within my heart, whether it's outward or not. And I see when this happens that I forget to be grateful for the partner that I have. I have no sense of thankfulness toward him in any steps, whether he did steps 1 through 9 perfectly and forgot step 10. I tend to just dwell on that last little thing. And I want to lord it over him, basically. And I fail to encourage him in the work that he's done for us, for our family, and the service that he is doing for me because he loves me. I just harp on those little details so much. So what I'm trying to do instead is to not make a list of the things that he hasn't done, but to realize all the things that he has and why he's doing those things, because he really does do it because he loves me. And he really does try, poor thing, to do things the way I want. He really does have a deference to me. And so I'm choosing to think the best of him rather than think the worst, and to remember to be grateful for what he's done for us and the service that he's given to me, rather than honing in on those little details.
My struggle is I try and use acts of kindness to manipulate my wife into getting what I want. So my power struggle isn't necessarily with being harsh or being loud, but okay, if I want this and I do all of this great good stuff, she's gonna owe me. And so there's no way she can say no to my request if I've done this and this and this. And so I will work tirelessly. I will do my best to try and get that 10th point checked off perfectly, so then I can do this and say, all right, now it's my turn. And so my manipulation, my power struggle is much more sinister, perhaps. It's much more hidden, because now all of the nice things that I try and do for my wife, she rightly has reason to be suspect of those things, because she's just wondering, when is the ask going to come? And I've had to ask God to really to change my heart on that.
Yeah.
We're just out of time. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Ooh, yeah. So that last little topic there, one filter that we've used to work through this power issue is the topic of honor. Like, how do we honor each other? So in Romans 12, 9 through 10, it says, don't just pretend to love one another. Really love them. Hate what is wrong, hold tightly to what is good, love each other with genuine affection, and take delight in honoring each other. And I really like the way that ESV says it. It says to outdo one another in showing honor. So it's this, not a competition anymore of what we didn't get or that it's my turn to win this time. it's really an outdoing of who can sacrifice the most, who can outdo the other in showing honor. And when you use this filter, it really begins to change your heart.
One helpful thing that I've come across to understand honor, a few months ago, I went to the Dallas Holocaust Museum, and I met a lady named Maggie First, who literally survived Nazi Germany. She was a little Jewish girl back in the 40s in Germany, and in telling her story, you hear this amazing tale of how she escaped and how she survived. And I found myself sitting, thinking, how many people are there today like her? World War II survivors. You know, not if they made it through, that was an amazing thing, but that was 70 years ago. Like, there aren't many people left alive. And all of a sudden, I found myself being just wrapped up with, this is an amazing lady, and I want to respect, I want to honor her merely because of who she is. Your spouse is somebody that deserves your honor merely because of who they are. And so how do we wrestle through this issue with power? We seek to honor. And so just to wrap up here with this last point, a gospel-centered relationship seeks to outdo each other in showing honor. And we do that by listening, by being concerned with their interests and needs, by sacrificing your plan with the goal of blessing the other person. But why do we struggle at this? Why is it so hard? Because we need a changed heart. Apart from God stepping in and doing great things in your marriage, you will struggle back and forth. And so we need to pray that God would change our hearts. So I want to throw it to the tables. You have some questions there. If you will take about 20 minutes or so and have some discussion time, and then we'll come up at the end with a few questions. So table leaders, you have it now.
All right, so we're ready to do the Q&A session, and we got Mike and Holly back up here, and we have a couple of great questions that came in. So I'm just going to go ahead and fire them off and save some time, hopefully, at the end for you all to wrap up your table conversations and get to it. So, all right, so guys, this first one, these are really good and really difficult, so good luck. All right, so how do you handle carrying out your role when your spouse isn't fulfilling theirs? And this is a for example. If the husband is not leading well, does the wife submit to something they feel is wrong? Or how does a husband handle being a leader to a wife that will not submit? So the main question was, how do you handle carrying out your role when your spouse isn't fulfilling their role?
I'll let you take that one.
That's good leadership there, Micah.
Yeah. I'll go first if you want. First of all, scripture is our authority. So if we use this as our lens, as an answer to the questions that come up in our mind, then we have some answers here. First of all, this Ephesians 5 passage is chock full of imperative sentences. That means they are commands and not if-then statements. So our roles really are to be obedient to the Lord in these things. So if scripture says wives are to submit, whether the husband is doing his job that we perceive or not, that's our role. And so our obedience is to the Lord, not so that we can have a blissful marriage necessarily even. Maybe it's something that the Lord is needing us to work on, to submit to authority. Oftentimes, I mean, scripture is God's authority over us. I mean, if we're not willing to submit to this authority, then of course we're going to have trouble submitting to our spouse. So that's part of the answer. I think that there are times when you would wonder, well, I don't think he's doing the right thing. And sometimes that's a preference. Have you expressed to your spouse what you feel like he should be doing? Have you talked about it? Those are hard topics to talk about in your first couple of years of being married, even your first 5 years. It's really hard to broach those subjects. But If you're not willing to talk about those things, it may just be that you're interpreting what you feel like he should be doing, and he has no idea. Maybe he didn't have a role model in his home to show him what it means to be a leader, a godly leader. But to talk about that and open your lines of communication between each other about that topic would be a really good place to start.
Have you ever had a fake conversation in your head with the fake Mike or the fake Holly, and then you actually had a real one later?
You are convinced that he's thinking this thing, and he's totally not.
Yeah. You know, like, it convinces you to not have the real one, but then later when you have the real one, you're like, oh, that went so much better.
This is a good question. It is profoundly hard. I mean, I want to say that, and I think what Holly said is right, but I want
to
say,
I tend to be a little terse, so he's going to soften it up right here, okay?
This is hard. I meet with, mainly with guys, but I hear stories of families that their home is in disarray, and I just, I understand this question. It's a hard question, but a couple things on that. I think the question is scary because it's scary for us to think about entering into a relationship where we put ourselves perhaps at risk to suffer. Like, it's one thing for us to say together, like, she's going to submit, I'm going to live like Christ has called me, and so we can enter into this with a measure of confidence because we're both saying we're going to pursue Christ. What happens when the other one doesn't? I think it's a very scary thing to consider putting yourself in a position where you might be taken advantage of. That is scary. That would be very hard. And so here's where I think, here's how we respond. I think we do what Holly said, where we say, this is not just a matter of my relationship with my spouse. This is also a matter of my relationship with the Lord. And so there are days when, even though Holly desires to submit, you know, that she doesn't. There are many days when I desire to love my wife like Christ loved the church, and I fail. And yet, we need to remain consistent to what God has called us to. Now, this is where I think things like community become incredibly important. If we are completely isolated and I degenerate into a horrible husband that abuses that authority, and we have not already connected into people that know us and love us, and guys that will come up and grab me by the scruff of my shirt and say, what are you doing? Then we have short-circuited the broader plan of what God has called us to do. Am I the head of my home? Yes. But I'm also under authority of the church. Like, if I'm not doing right, Ted or other pastors have every right and responsibility to come and say, hey, cut that out. That is not right. So I think it becomes a matter of, can I say, I trust God to suffer and to struggle in a difficult season of my relationship, even when my spouse isn't living up to what they're supposed to do? Can I endure because God has called me to do that, and because he will empower me to do that, and the church will be there to help correct things that have gone askew? Yeah. That's a hard answer, but that's what I think we should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we just do that and apply daily, the infection will go away immediately, right?
Exactly.
You might have just answered this question, but let me just read it for the sake of if there's anything else you want to share on this one. But it's asking, how does the submission piece work when you can see that the other spouse is not walking with the Lord or seeking him in their decision-making?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one. Sometimes it's really easy for the spouse, whether it's the husband or the wife, to judge the other's faith and where they are in their walk with the Lord. I think that oftentimes we can start to have an ideal of what our husbands should be doing. I'm assuming this came from a wife, maybe, because that often is the crux of, well, I'm, you know, my husband isn't following the Lord, so I shouldn't be following him. And that really is a tough place to be in. But I think that no matter where your spouse is in their faith walk, you as the wife can be their encourager. You can be on their team to encourage them to grow. And also, just to I already mentioned this a little bit, but thinking the best of your spouse can do tremendous things for him. It can bolster his feeling of, yes, I can rise to this amazing calling that God has called him to, just by being on his side and thinking the best of him and praying for him, honestly. If you feel like your husband is failing in that area, then you can pray for him, and the Lord will do a work in his heart that you could never do, no matter how much you badger or act like you've got the perfect plan for it. So,
10-point list you make with the laugh. Yeah, that's a great answer, Holly. Thanks for sharing that and kind of accentuating that point of praying for each other, and specifically in your role as a support and a spouse. So here's one that's going to, so this kind of differentiates the thresholds we've been talking about. We've kind of been talking about a certain threshold of this topic today about power, but this one asks, takes it a little further, and we might be talking about it in a different category now, but it says, how do you respond when your spouse or your significant other abuses their power? And specifically, what if this misuse is actually abuse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate it that we live in a world where husbands abuse wives. I mean, that is a horrible, horrible thing. And it's easy for me to say there will be a special place in hell for men who do that. You know, that's completely self-justifying my own sins that I have and saying that that one's worse. But you know what? I think any man who would abuse his wife, it is absolutely horrible. So I want to lay that out there. I think one of the things that's hard for us in the heat of the moment is to know when they're abusing and when they're just being a jerk, as to when they're just being unkind. I mean, we certainly have a scale that we go to that is going to favor us. And so I think, coming back to my issue of community, I think this is where being connected with other people, whether that's in your home group, whether that's your pastor or a mentor, really becomes important. So some of the specifics here. I think if you're at a place where you feel like your spouse is abusive, then I think you first need to make that a matter of prayer with the Lord, that the Lord give you strength and give you wisdom. Man or wife, I mean, husband or wife, this goes both ways, because certainly women can be horrible to men as well. But I think you need to make this a matter of prayer. I think you need to begin to talk with other people who know you and care for you and say, hey, things are not good at home. Can I share with you as best I can an honest perspective of what's been happening, and begin to receive counsel? I think that's where other people stepping in becomes critical, because if you have somebody that is driven and abusive, they're bent towards that, it's gonna likely require more people coming in to say, hey, this isn't right. Now, with that said, I think we have a deep aversion to any measure of suffering. And so we're quick to say, my spouse is abusing me because, you know, and we fill in a blank that maybe perhaps isn't abuse. And so I think we need to be careful to step into our relationship and say, I know there are going to be days when my wife is going to wrong me, and it's going to be wrong. And there is nothing that I think would the scriptures say that put us in a place where we can't stop and say, hey, look, that was wrong. Like, this can't continue. I think even in a wife submitting to her husband, there are points when she says, look, the scriptures are, this is out of bounds from the scriptures' sake. Can we talk about this? But I think we need to realize we as people hate suffering. And so do we have a proper place built in that says, my wife is going to wrong me, and you know what? I'm going to forgive her, and I'm going to overlook an offense. That there would be grace given each way, because I will fail her, and she will fail me. Can I extend grace? So this is not a simple answer. But I think those would be some of the things that I'd say are important in that discussion.
And part of having community around you really is to help you kind of define what that word would be. So what it, is this really abuse? And that might be a question you have. And in isolation, that's a dangerous place to be, because you're removing the accountability, or removing the ability for anyone else to step into that situation. But that community can help you discover whether or not that is, and it might be sometimes.
It might be, and it needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, come tell me, you know, I'll go show up at the door.
Yeah.
But too often,
put your number up
we
there.
End up just interpreting things that, and we perceive we've been misused because we've interpreted this person doing that thing against us. Simply sometimes because they're not doing it the way we would do it. And that's a dangerous place to be, to get to a point where you feel like, well, I know that he's doing this because of this reason, and so therefore I'm out. I don't have to do this anymore. I'm not called to that anymore. And so there is a line where that crosses into actual verbal and physical abuse. But oftentimes we trick ourselves into thinking we're being more misused than we really are, and there might actually be a sin issue on our side to address. And I'm not saying that women who are abused or men who are abused are in that situation. I'm not saying that, so don't hear that. But there are times that we trick ourselves into thinking that we're more misused than we actually are, because there's some sin issue in our own heart that we haven't dealt with.
Kind of similar to that idea of you have that conversation in your head and it gets worse and worse and worse, but you actually haven't addressed the person or you haven't brought somebody else. Last week we talked about how difficult it is sometimes to have these really hard conversations, and sometimes a third party is necessary to facilitate that and make sure that everyone's being civil and thinking clearly, because we can get really tied up in our own damaged thoughts or the frustrations we're feeling that aren't coming across very well, so that third party can really help. So,
and the sooner you address those things, the better. Don't hold on to it for 5, 10 plus years before you talk to anybody about it.
Do you ever hold on to things?
Because then it's harder to undo.
And you're like, this is going to be really bad for them because I'm going to hold on to all these things. And
it's really worse for you. It's worse for you.
Yeah, clear that account out really fast.
Yeah.
Thank you two so much for coming up here and really answering the tough questions. Those were really tough, and those answers could have been a lot more detailed and a lot longer, and probably should be. So if you're hearing that and you're not happy with that, please come up and talk to us, because we want to continue to have that conversation if that's something you want to do. But in the meantime, thank these two, please, with your round of applause for being here. Thank you.